for February 16th, 2005. We are beginning our presentations today on community colleges and workforce development. There is a little bit of confusion about materials. Some of us have materials back in our offices, but not here. But we have a revised presentation, actually, which was what we will be doing today. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Bender now to give a better explanation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today you're starting your Phase 1 public hearings for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. As you may know, the co-chairs have asked subcommittees to work through Phase 1 in a fairly expedited manner, and there are only 3 days scheduled for community colleges. Today and tomorrow they'll be talking about their operations budget, and on the following Monday there'll be a day set aside to talk about their capital construction requests. Please note that materials are being distributed to your offices, hopefully a week in advance, and we did distribute materials to you from community colleges last week. There are a set of materials that came looking like this, and they had a yellow cover letter on top of them to help your staff identify them. We ask you to bring those with you. Today, though, for the first day, if you didn't bring them, community colleges have a revised Day 1 presentation for today anyway, which is in front of you and replaces the materials that you got last week. Yesterday, we distributed a similar packet of materials to your office for the state library hearing, which is next week. So please bring those when you have state library next week. And probably today or tomorrow, we'll be distributing the OHSU materials, because now that the things are coming more quickly, they'll be in your offices. So if there aren't any questions about the materials, that's all really I have to add at this point.
This is the new.
I think that's
okay. I'll double check with your office to make sure that we did distribute those.
Before we actually get started, because there's so many people in the audience, and I think they're all here for the same reason, and some of them may be familiar with a member that's associated with them that's here, but they may not be associated with the diversity of membership we have on the committee. Could we start out, actually, and just maybe just give a brief sort of a view of where we're from, and I'll give a view of our two missing senators also. Senator Whitsitt, who is not here, he may be here later today, is actually from Klamath Falls and actually has a district that I think is probably somewhere between around a third of the state of Oregon in terms of geography. That would probably be a fair statement. Senator Walker, who is the chair of the Education Senate Committee, has a meeting this morning, and I think she may join us later. She's a Lane County legislator. And then I'll turn it over to Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson. I'm state senator from Northeast Oregon. I live in Pendleton, but I represent four counties: Morrow County, Umatilla County, Union County, and Wallowa County. It's about 200 miles from one end to the other end, and about 150 miles north and south. So Senator Whitsitt has probably a little bit bigger land area, but I'm kind of in that area. Blue Mountain Community College is in my district, Eastern Oregon University. So we have some very crucial education issues that we try and address, and we're looking forward to hearing the testimony.
Good morning. Avelle Gordley. I represent Northeast and Southeast Portland, and I'm proud to tell you that my second office is at the Southeast campus of Portland Community College. I hold many constituent and other community meetings on that campus. President Algie Gatewood, who's there in the audience, the president of Cascade Campus, will tell you that the first time I met him, it was at the Southeast campus. Thank you. And it's just a delight to be serving again on the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. And if there are students in the audience, please raise your hands, because we'd like to know that you're present too. Thank you for being here.
I'm Richard Devlin. I'm a senator from Senate District 19. which is West Glen, Lake Oswego, Tualatin, and portions of lower southwest Portland. I've got a long history with community colleges, both as a student and as a parent. So, and actually, I have one of my chief and longtime supporters in the audience, Norma Jean Germond, who's sitting right there. who, if I'm not towing the line on community colleges, will be calling me on a nightly basis. So. And. Representative Jensen.
Chair, I am Representative Bob Jensen. I'm from Pendleton, and that's House District 58. Actually, my district is confined pretty much to Umatilla County, and I am proud to say that my professional career was spent at Blue Mountain Community College, and so I see the president here this morning, and it's good to see him now, although I must say when I was in my professional career, presidents of the college were not necessarily happy to see me come in.
I'm Steve March. I represent the south half of Senator Gordley's district, so southeast center of PCC is in my district. I also had a tentative affiliation with Mount Hood Community College, but didn't get enough enrollment in my class to teach there. And as an adjunct, that happens a lot. So I also have taught at Portland State.
Good morning. I'm Gene Wisnett. I'm the state representative from District 53, the beautiful Deschutes County. I had the pleasure of serving on the interim education House Education Committee, so I've not only had this couple of really tense months or weeks here on this committee, but had the interim to study the community colleges. I'm proud to represent, although it's in the city of Bend and not physically located in my district, we have a great community college, Central Oregon Community College. Dr. Milton, Matt McCoy, Connie are here, the board, so thank them for coming. We face really big challenges in Central Oregon. As we talked to the superintendents yesterday, we have a tremendous growth and a big requirement in Central Oregon. And there's not many colleges around us, so we face big challenges, and we're going to hope the committee will consider those and all of your concerns. So thanks for coming.
Senators Witsit and Walker, I gave your introductions, but if you would like to redo them, that would be fine. I did say positive things about both of you.
Really? I'm glad. I'm happy to put a face to the previous introduction. And I live in Eugene. I don't know if the chair shared that with you. And my community college is Lane Community College, and our wonderful president is sitting right there in the third row, Mary Spilby. It's a great school. I went to school there myself, as did every member of my family. Though I'm a graduate of the U of O, and I think community colleges are the key to economic development in Oregon, and I'm so glad to see you here today. Thank you.
And I'm Doug Witsit from Senate District 28, Klamath Lake, Crook, Jackson, and part of Deschutes County. Actually, I started college at Central Oregon Community College in Bend way back when it was a night school on the campus of the high school. So way back, I went on to Oregon State and graduated from Washington State with a degree in veterinary medicine. We have Klamath Community College in Klamath, which is one of the later ones to get going, and it's really flourishing. As a matter of fact, I was gone yesterday because I was meeting with the president of the community college, Fred Smith, and president of OIT, Martha Handel, and the governor of the state of Oregon regarding that coalition between those two schools, which is, as you know, we're trying to develop a seamless means of moving from K-12 to the community colleges to the university system. And I believe that what we're doing in Klamath is a template for that. So thank you.
I forgot to mention that my district is in Portland Community College territory and in Clackamas Community College territory. So, at this point, I will officially open the public hearing on 5506, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And could the Commissioner for Community College Services introduce herself?
Well, good morning, and thank you. For the record, I am Cam Preuss-Brawley. I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. I'm also the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I want to thank the Chair for the opportunity for each of you to make your introductions. I think that was a very good thought, as the many of the people in the audience know you if you are their representative, but they don't know the balance of you as legislators. So I do appreciate having that small bit of getting to know you to begin with. Our plan today is to provide you with an overview of community college and workforce programs from around the state. As I said, many of you are aware probably a daily basis of your own local community college, and many of you know your workforce providers as well. This is a way to set a statewide context and then bring it home to your local college. Many of you may know that community colleges were enacted into law in 1959, and by 1962 we were serving 19,000 students. Today, Oregon community colleges enroll more than 330,000 students statewide, providing an array of programs that are designed to strengthen academic knowledge and skills, prepare students for entry into an advancement in the workplace, to complete adult basic learning if they need it, to complete undergraduate work to proceed to a bachelor's or beyond, and to provide employers with specialized training for their employees. I want to note that peak enrollment in community colleges occurred in the 2001-02 year, where we served over 400,000 students. The other part of the department is the workforce system. It's a primarily federally funded part of the department. It helps youth and adult get and keep and progress in their jobs. Now I'm going to go through the slides. We do have them projected, so you can either follow along in the handout or look up, or both. Try to set a fairly brisk pace so that we can both cover what I'd like to say and make sure that there's plenty of opportunity for your questions. I want to start by talking about where we find ourselves in our economic recovery for Oregon. And this case was well stated in the recently published Oregon Business Plan and their education initiative. In order for people to get and keep good jobs, they have to have education. And post-secondary education is an economic driver, and it has been well documented. The largest segment of new jobs in the next 10 to 15 years will require an associate's degree. It's not just the economy. Education also provides for individuals' well-being. We can look at the economic reports and know that your income rises as you increase your education, and it does make a difference. It's not simply for the individual, but it's for the overall good of the community and the economy. There is a return on this education investment. The more education someone has, the more they earn, and the less likely they are to be unemployed. Oregon reaps the benefits of people who are well-educated and employed through personal income tax. Oregon has an outgo to support people who are unemployed, who need additional assistance, be they in the correction system or on the health plan or others. The number of people who are unemployed rises with their lack of education. So the more education you have, your duration on unemployment is a quarter of that with someone with a high school or less education. If we know that it takes educated citizens to meet the bar of growing the economy, then Oregon must raise the bar. We must meet it. For that increased economic growth and increased productivity and profitability, we need an educated citizenry. The role of community colleges is to provide Oregonians, no matter their background or their circumstance, the skills they need to both set and reach their personal goal or their personal bar. I'm on slide six now. You have likely seen this particular picture of completion versus attrition. This is another part of the bar that we need to concentrate on. For every 100 ninth graders that are in high school, 69 of them finish. And 3 or 6 years later, 15 of them graduate with an associate's or a bachelor's degree. This comes from a national study. It was highlighted again by the Oregon Business Council. Oregon is in the top 25% of states with participation of students entering college. We are unfortunately in the bottom 25% for having them complete college. And if we are to have that robust economy that we need and want, we will need to decrease that attrition and increase completion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Let me ask, on this particular slide, do you also have information that would update us on the number of high school students who are currently taking a community college course or courses? I think that information would also flesh out the picture that you're trying to share with us about completion, attrition, and who's there, who's there now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I will cover some of that later on in the presentation today, but we'll make sure that we specifically answer your question.
Thank you.
If we don't cover it completely. To finish on this particular slide, I think it's important that Oregon has been viewed by those around us, both our neighboring states and national think tankers, as people who are importing. Oregon is importing its talent. We're importing lots of bachelor degree and post-baccalaureate individuals. But in order to be successful and grow our economy, we must grow our own.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Ms. Press Frawley. That's an interesting thing you just said, because I have a job shadow today. Professor Sam Stern, the dean of the School of Education at Oregon State University, and he was just telling me as we were walking into this room that 60% of our teachers last year came from out of state. What's wrong with that picture? We have plenty of talented people here and great teaching programs, so I'm very concerned about that comment. It's not really a question,
no.
It's just a comment and observation.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they were going to states where their job future was more stable than it was here. That's a side commentary. Please proceed.
Thank you. The next slide talks about the America's ability to educate its people. This is more of a summation of what I have been trying to illustrate. I did want to point out that as the United States, as the global economy moves to a knowledge-based economy, it's not just about high-tech industries. Our economic competitiveness will demand more workers with more knowledge and more education. Community colleges and workforce development are key partners in the development of the 21st century workforce. Slide 8, it shows you a dramatic illustration of how skills and jobs have changed in the last 50 years. I want to draw your attention to the bottom line, the skilled percentages. Skills matter more than ever today. In the 1950s, only 20% of occupations required skilled workers. By 2000, 65% of jobs require skilled workers. You notice that the professional has stayed the same, but the unskilled and skilled have changed places. I've said that skills matter more than ever. Why? This slide shows you the fastest growing jobs and their requirement of education. Not surprisingly, beginning with the associate's degree, which is purple bar, at 32%, each of those above that requires would require more post-secondary education than those below. And you will also notice that they are all in double digits, 20 or better. The fastest growing jobs across all business sectors will require post-secondary education. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Higher learning does mean higher earning. This slide shows you male and female earning potential. If you have a post-secondary education, you can expect to earn more than twice what you would if you did not, if you didn't have a high school diploma. This slide really brings home the message. Oregon's economy will grow faster and be more robust as our citizens are educated and their education increases.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordon.
Did you wish to comment on the gender imbalance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that's a story for another day.
Well, it clearly appears from that that basically that if you are female, you basically make, well, if you are male, put it that way, if you are male, you basically generally would make more than a female who is at one step higher than you in terms of education throughout that graph. That's consistent. So it's not a very good commentary. So.
And that deserves to be noted.
Yeah.
That it is a problem. Systemic.
Yeah. Please go on.
Let's begin now to talk about the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Tried to lay the context within which our work is contained. We believe that we exist to help bring about the kind of Oregon I have just described, that we provide resources to local communities, stimulate the economy to bring about well-prepared workers to educate and to provide a resource, whether it's basic skills, technical skills, certificates, and degrees. You'll note there that our mission is to contribute leadership and resources because the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development delivers only one program, and that's the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Otherwise, we pass funds through and others deliver for us and for you. Given that 98% of the funds that come to the department, whether they're state general funds, federal funds, or other funds, are passed through to local education and workforce service providers, it's important that we have a set of values that we operate under. And they would, not to your surprise, talk a lot about collaboration, respect, effectiveness, and support. We work with literally hundreds of service providers at the local level, and we are guided by these values. They set the course for our work. Many of you know your local college. You know local college board members. Some are here today, and their and your presidential leaders. What you may have less familiarity with is the governance structure for community college. Slide 13 shows you, at least in some form, a governance structure. We believe it does ensure flexibility and accountability at both the state and the local level. Slide 14 talks about the boards that provide governance for the department. There are three. I have a lot of bosses. The first is the State Board of Education. As the previous slide showed, they are appointed by the governor, and they appoint me. There's six bullets down on the left side of that slide that talk about what the State Board of Education goals are. You will also likely remember that they are the governance board for the K-12 system, so they have responsibility pre-K through community colleges. They then work and are a part of the joint boards of education. So the middle column there shows the goals and the themes of that joint work that they do with the State Board of Higher Education. And they make what we call now the education enterprise. That would be pre-K through 16.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make an observation here while you're talking about the Joint Boards of Education. I raised this issue in my Senate Education Policy Committee, and the Joint Boards have not been meeting, as they are required to by statute. Mm-hmm. Both boards have admitted to that malfeasance or misstep, let's put it, and they have committed to meeting that statutory obligation. So what I would like you to answer for my question would be, what is the purpose of those joint boards? What is the purpose of those boards meeting together jointly so that we understand why it's important for them to meet that statutory obligation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the joint boards, I do not have the statutory language in hand, but I would paraphrase it that its role is to look at the issues that exist pre-K through 16 and to remove barriers for students' transition from high school to community college, across community colleges, to the university system. So they exist to raise those issues, appoint or work together themselves groups that will resolve those issues. I know that in your future hearing schedule you will be hearing from the Oregon University system. They have had a rather robust agenda for the last year to look at what we call more, better, faster. That it contains the transition or seamlessness of students' movement across those real permeable membranes, if you will, of students. So that's, as I understand it, that's why they exist. They, as you point out, had not met for some time, nearly 18 months. They have met now and have taken action around several different work items that will increase the effectiveness of students' transitions, be that the integrated data system or the transfer module that really looks at helping with an eye on student success, how to help students be successful across what are three different education sectors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just really wanted to hear that so that the committee understood what the value is in those boards meeting jointly. And it appears there is significant value. And I was disappointed to learn they had not been taking advantage of that obligation. And it has now changed.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In past sessions, I've heard complaints or criticisms or comments about the fact that community college boards are part of the State Board of Education, and it kind of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes. Do you feel like that's still an issue, and do you have any suggestions of how potentially we could address that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, governance of community college is a perennial discussion. It is sometimes characterized as the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and our relationship to the State Board of Education has statutory authority that covers maybe a page in statute. The State Board of Education for Community Colleges has been termed a light touch policy board, and at times that's what the community college community appreciates, and periodically it's what rubs and provides friction. I think that in our review, and I don't want to speak for all community colleges, but the last review of community college governance that was under the leadership of the Oregon Community College Association, which brought together members of the State Board of Education, local community college board members, and community college presidents, came to the conclusion that the current governance structure was just fine.
With a few issues.
Always. A few.
Representative Galizio, do you want to give a quick introduction of your Representative Galizio is not a member of the committee, but like all members of the legislature, is free to come in and sit in on a committee hearing. And he's actually from the area of the Portland Community College district, and I believe he may be a faculty member there. So,
yes, as far as I know, it depends what happens with the budget, I suppose. But pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Sorry to interrupt, and I appreciate the opportunity to say I. State Representative House District 35, which is a tigered area, also encompasses one Multnomah County precinct, which is where Portland Community College Sylvania campus is located, and I am a member of the faculty there my 12th year there. So thank you. I appreciate it.
And that this doesn't mean to be a comment in any way that's... I'll just stop it at that. But Representative March sat in on the committee for an entire session and was not a member, and in this session was able to convince the speaker that he should get an open slot. So, so I'll leave it at
I'll
that.
I'll take your fifth.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I want to make sure that members of the panel know that community colleges are not simply the sector in between K-12 and the university system. Community colleges provide education for the following. As I indicated to Senator Walker, we do an awful lot of accelerated learning for high school students who are ready for post-secondary education. We also expend considerable resources on the second chance learning for individuals who have dropped out and were unable to complete their secondary learning. We provide professional technical skill building, whether it's degree or job specific. We provide university transfer programs for students who want to complete a bachelor's or higher. And finally, there's an awful lot of reskilling that happens at community colleges for those who've been laid off, who are unemployed or underemployed, so they can expand their career potential. This work ties to that third board that you see listed on this slide, and that's the Statewide Workforce Board. The Workforce Board oversees the workforce education and employment programs so that Oregonians have access to jobs and to lifelong learning. The department does provide staffing for all three of these boards. I've talked about this already, but the role of the department is to connect what might seem like disparate but really aren't service delivery entities, and that would be the 17 community colleges across the state. There are 7 identified workforce areas, and there are 36 different Oregon Youth Conservation Corps programs. We do this by providing policy development, technical assistance, and resource allocation. All of our delivery is done at the local level, and as I indicated earlier, it is done by literally hundreds of others. We work with high schools, the university system, private colleges, and businesses to meet the learning needs of Oregonians. This next slide is a little busy. This is a picture of the 17 community colleges across Oregon and their satellite campuses. And as I told the House Education Committee when we were there, we're everywhere. Just about everywhere. Not only do community colleges have campuses, and satellites, but they also deliver their programs in schools, in churches, libraries, and other places. Community colleges offer distance learning online programs across the state, and you can, in fact, earn an associate's degree without ever stepping foot on a campus. In 2003-04, more than 62,000 students were online and learning. So you can imagine a student of all ages at home, at their computer, in class at a community college center or a community center, on a campus or in their local library. They are all learning adults, and that's why learning happens everywhere in community colleges. They're taking courses from...
Excuse me, Senator Gordley had a question.
I'm sorry to interrupt your train of thought, but how many students have earned that degree in the way that you just explained without ever having stepped foot on an actual campus, what do those numbers look like?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I will bring you back that information. I don't have it tucked away.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I don't want to embarrass anyone.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to embarrass anyone, but I think Representative March pointed out Central Oregon Community College is in Deschutes County, not Crook, just so everyone knows it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, thank you for that correction, and we will correct this map. I thought maybe Deschutes had sort of moved a little east.
I'm
yes,
sorry,
indeed.
That's kind of
just trying to make it more central, actually. Please proceed.
Thank you. I was about to tick off the different kinds of courses that colleges are offering, from accounting to zoology, from adult education to nursing. Transfer courses that include writing, math, science, and social science, and special training for workforce needs. Some of those special workforce needs that have recently had assistance from community colleges include firms such as Gunderson, Freeman Marine Equipment, Mountain Monogram, and Custom Interface. These companies have partnered with their local community college and their workforce system partners to deliver welding, English, and math upgrading skill upgrades. To further illustrate, one company used access of these trainings to replace retiring workers. Another used English language skill building classes to also update and upgrade company manuals. Another company used the service to bring entry-level workers up to advanced level skills. And yet another company used it to coordinate their actual company business plan and screen and hire employees. All of the effort of delivering service in communities can be found in the vision and mission statements that we have collected from the 17 community colleges. This slide shows you that there is, not surprisingly, consistency and thematic approaches to the 17 colleges in their vision statement and their mission statements. It's to be responsive to their community, to provide education and learning, to provide success. It is here that individual community members' hopes get realized. The dreams of communities, families, and individuals in Oregon are interwoven here and part of the American dream. Oregon's community colleges foster economic development, educational access, and a sense of place in their communities. With the decline in the economy, and subsequently the decline in state resources to community colleges, the dreams of access and opportunity are at risk. This next slide shows you funding for community colleges and how it has changed over time. I give you a pre-Measure 5 picture where the major proportion of funding for a community college was local property tax. In the biennium that we are currently in, state general fund and state property tax have almost been mirror replacements of each other. Student tuition has also increased. Pre-Measure 5, it was about 19%. Currently, tuition is 28%, and you've all heard the stories, it will likely be on the rise. The implementation of Measures 5, 47, and 50 have placed responsibility on the state to help fund community colleges, and that responsibility has increased. The state's general fund and property tax funding, as I said, has switched places over the last 14 years. The reality is that we're not only shifting resources, the state's share of resources to community colleges has declined, leading to increased local tuition and limiting access. I'm going to move now to that other part of the department's responsibility, and that's workforce development. This map, almost as busy as the last, shows you the one-stop service centers around the state that provide access to those job seekers and workers who are in need of getting and keeping a job, and in connecting with employers and businesses for the training that they need. You see that logo up there, the blue and green, with, we call it the Oregonoid. That's the logo that Oregon has adopted for its workforce centers. There are over 40 centers around the state where partners from the Employment Department to Economic Development to Department of Human Services are co-located to serve individuals who are in need of finding a job or upgrading their skills. This co-location is key, that one-stop shopping concept, so that an individual doesn't have to run all over town to get the services that they need. Statewide, we have a data collection system that tracks how many people are accessing the service, and this is actually walk through the door. Over 300,000 Oregonians last year used the service, whether they were seeking training or a job. In the back of your materials for today, you have the annual report that is entitled Stronger Together. The Department of Labor, the Federal Department of Labor, does require that the state, through CCWD, provide an annual report of our progress with the resources that we use under the Workforce Investment Act. Oregon, like many states, but we still think we are unique, looks at not just reporting what one program provides to Oregonians, but looks across the workforce system, hence the name Working or Stronger Together, because it is a picture of not simply one program where the Department of Labor requires the report, but looks at a multitude of programs. In the back flyleaf of that report, you have a set of tables. That's the actual performance that is reported to the Department of Labor of how the state did in its performance. And we'll be covering that in some detail tomorrow when we talk about performance measures in depth. I mentioned a little earlier that the only program that we really have our fingers in at the local level is the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. It is a program that is in all 36 counties. The key here shows you where resources come from to fund those programs. And they include the lottery proceeds that the legislature provides. The Marine Board also makes a rather healthy contribution, and the Parks Department also does. So that's how the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps serves youth ages 13 to 24 around the state all year long. The program...
Yes, Representative Jensen.
On the issue of the Parks contribution to this, how much of that is lottery money rather than other state money?
I believe it would all be lottery money, okay, almost in this case, because all of their sources now are dedicated lottery funds.
Yes. thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Except for maybe a few grants that they get from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, we'll bring you back that information. I'm not certain of the exact.
I think that the chair is correct on that at this point. I don't have any question about his comments on it or that. I just think we need to recognize that Park's contribution to this is in fact part of the lottery money, or is from the same source as those. Thank you.
You bet.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
My final comment on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps is that all the youth that are served here have an integrated classroom and field experience, so they have applied conservation learning as part of the Corps.
So I can correct myself, since I did believe I made an error. Most of it would be lottery funds, but as we all know, too, the state parks actually generates a great deal of revenue itself in terms of fees from users. So you could say it's, we'd have to look at their actual budget to see where they're taking it from, but I would guess it would be from the lottery portion.
I think the question that state clerks have the fees have been inadequate to meet their overhead, and as a consequence, that was the reason for ballot measure 66, which provided dedicated lottery funds to state parks.
Not to be an aside here, but they're actually doing quite well given the potential expansion to line games. So, yes.
Thank you. One of my first assignments coming into the legislature almost 14 years ago now was serving on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps Advisory Board. And at that time, and up until very recently, I know that there have been challenges around increasing diversity within the ranks of the Corps. At the appropriate point in your presentation, would you please speak to what progress is being made? What are the strategies being used? What are the remaining challenges? And how might this legislature be helpful? Thank you.
For the sake of the public here, I probably should make a couple of comments. When I was first assigned to chair this committee, I had a concern that given the nature of some of our presentations, that we might have a problem with staying within our time frame from the standpoint of running out of material to do in the time allotted, because I was concerned there would not be enough questions from the committee. I have actually no longer actually have that concern and have appreciated all the questions from the committee and would encourage more of them. But I just wanted members in the audience to know that it is pretty normal practice in our hearings to basically ask questions during the middle of presentation, because if our members always wait till the end of presentations, they may not get to ask the questions, so they take this opportunity. Also, because there are so many of you here and so many are probably familiar with this already, the members of the legislature, both in the House and the Senate, are extremely busy, and they are often called out of committee hearings for other business, and that does not mean in any way that they are in any way less interested in the subject before them. It just means that they are being torn in multiple directions at different times. So I just wanted to put those things on the record, and please proceed at this point.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, to your questions about enrollment and participation of people of color, and if I don't have it in day two already, I will make sure that we cover that information for you. When the Department of Community Colleges, which had been the Office of Community College Services until 1999, had the job training, at that time it was the Job Training Partnership Act, the federally funded job training program, merged into it, we were faced with what looked from the outside as a perfect harmony between workforce development, which almost always took training and education, and community colleges, whose main business was training and education. But the reality was melding a state-administered program with federally administered program or directed programs did become somewhat of a task. What you see in front of you is our depiction of how we have tried to align and integrate both state, federal, and now other funded programs so that we are able to report program results and use our policy, technical assistance, and resources in a way that really captures for youth and the public the good that comes from this delivery system. As I said, we are a pass-through agency, so we use the goals and the mission of our agency, along with policy, technical assistance, and resources, to ensure that we are getting results and that we can monitor performance. The focal point of tomorrow's discussion will be going into some detail about those performance measures and the results from them. But today I just wanted to provide a closer look at how the department uses technical assistance and statewide initiatives with our stakeholders. Our performance measures, which we'll be addressed in greater detail tomorrow, provide accountability for the federal funds we administer, and those include Carl Perkins, professional technical dollars, the Workforce Investment Act, both the one-stop dollars and the Adult Basic Education and Family Literacy, as well as performance measures that are connected to Oregon's benchmarks and the community college commitment to what we call the four A's: accountability, accessibility, affordability, and adaptability. So the five areas of policy that the department concentrates on, not surprisingly, are the majority of work that happens at a community college. We offer a variety of technical assistance around and provide partnerships with programs so that we can ensure student success. The department primarily identifies and partners with programs at the local level to deliver those services. Some examples recently would be work we have done on accelerating high school student learners. In 2003-04, community colleges, in conjunction with qualified high school instructors, helped students earn $78,000 college credits for an estimated cost savings of families and students of over $4 million. When we look at industry certifications for the same year, 03-04, over 5,300 students from community colleges, or 95% of the students who took licensure exams, passed both the national and state exams. For business and industry, during the same time frame of 03-04, over 23,000 employees were trained at approximately 500 employers across the state. This is just an illustration of how a combination of community colleges working with their partners are economic drivers and providers of access and opportunity for Oregonians. I'd like to concentrate now on each of those levels, just to provide each of those five areas to give you a little deeper look. The comprehensive mission of both the department and the community college calls for them to be what many call all things to all people. What community colleges tend to be known for is their lower division transfer function. You will see that there are many students who have issues in their transfer. We like to think that the students that have issues are the ones that you hear about, and there are lots of students who transfer that you never hear about. Latest count is about 16,000 students transfer between community colleges and the four-year schools. And yes, we have run into snags. That's why we have the Oregon University System and community colleges aggressively looking at those issues. We have two different boards or commissions that work on this. There has been for nearly a decade something called the Joint Boards Articulation Commission. Their sole job is to identify and iron out those transition road bumps, you might say.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Jensen.
Just for the record, and this probably is a question more appropriate when we get to the Oregon University System, but would we not expect to find some glitches when you transfer from University A to University B also?
Yeah.
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, I'm not sure I want to reply for the university system about how their transfer rate and
I'm not concerned so much about their transfer rates as I am I thought you were getting to this ability of community college students to transfer with less problems, if you please, or the course acceptance. And I would merely like the committee to be aware, I think, that you figure to have problems when you transfer from one university to another university, as well as when you transfer from a community college to a university, having been the unfortunate recipient of some of that when I was an undergraduate 100 years ago.
The last part was an exaggeration.
I seldom do that. That's a loud one.
The 100 years. Please proceed.
Thank you. Tomorrow, you will hear from Dr. Gretchen Schutte. She is chair of the Excellence in Delivery and Productivity Committee, also known as More Better Faster. She has led that committee to look at community college, university, and high school transfer issues. They have identified some, and they have asked the joint boards of education, I'm wishing Senator Walker was here, to tackle those issues. And they have recently adopted a transfer module for students that would be both the Board of Higher Education, the Board of Education, and the Joint Boards of Education have adopted a transfer model for students wanting to take a single year of coursework and transfer. We have had in place for some time what we call the Associate of Arts Transfer Degree, the AAOT, or in Transfer Degree, I'm sorry, left out the O, for those students who know when they enter the community college that what they want to do is transfer to a four-year school. So that has existed for some time. Community colleges also have co-enrollment agreements with universities around the state. Probably the most well-known and well-established is the Lynn Benton Community College co-enrollment program with Oregon State University, where students who enroll are considered students of both entities or both institutions. This facilitates transfer, program advising, and funding. They do one admission form. They do one financial aid form. And they find the schedule that best suits the student. Currently, 15 of the 17 community colleges have co-enrollment programs, and all of the community colleges across the state have articulation agreements so that credits taken at a community college will transfer to a public and private college around or university. Okay. Moving on to professional technical education.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordon.
Before you do that, you didn't touch on college credit now. Could you speak to what that reference is?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I thought I was going to be redundant, so I skipped that talking point, but thank you for calling me back to it. I had mentioned earlier the statistics of the 78,000 credits, college credits, that would be college credit now. And that it was earned by over 13,000 students.
High school students.
High school students.
If I may say here, Mr. Chair, just as an FYI for the committee, but also for the department, there currently is in the Senate Education Committee Senate Bill 300, Expanded Options. This is a bill that is being introduced for the third or fourth session. It would allow students in grades 11 and 12 to be able to take a course or courses at a community college with the fees for the course or courses and materials, cost of materials being paid by the sending high school. The focus is on expanding options, expanding opportunities for students who are ready to move on, including at-risk students, however they might be defined, and also allows for outreach and capturing students who may have dropped out, recognizing that there's a lot of potential, human potential, that we don't want to get away from us. So again, I just share this as an FYI. I don't know that you had an opportunity to look at the legislation in its current form. It's open to amendment. I would certainly invite your support. Again, this is about expanding options and opportunities and access for Oregon students. We currently have programs, similar programs available in different places around the state, but our approaches are fragmented. There's no system as such, and there's no existing policy, statewide policy, that says we will, when a student is ready to move on, make that happen for that student. If you wish to comment, that would be fine. Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I am, of course, aware of Senate Bill 300, and I think we look forward to working with you on that bill, because we are, at the core, interested in student success. The concept that you put forward is one that we certainly agree with, recognizing that there are financial conversations that need to be had around the proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was on page 24 of your handout, wanting to spend a little bit of time talking about professional technical programs offered through community colleges. This is yet another aspect of that comprehensive mission. These professional technical programs are essential to Oregon's economy and its communities. This is training that assists a person to be a building inspector, a fire science major, a nurse, electronics or networking major, criminal justice, horticulture, welder, or manufacturer. 32% of community college enrollment happens in professional technical programs. These are the skills and trainings that our economy and citizens need. All of the professional technical programs provided at a community college have a community advisory committee. Hundreds of people dedicate their time to ensuring that the professional technical programs that are offered are current and meet industry standards. Professional technical programs are also some of the most expensive to offer and operate at a community college. It's important to note that in times of declining resources, these programs are often the most at risk because they are costly to keep the equipment and other standards up to date. Another aspect of the comprehensive mission of community colleges is adult basic education, to help those who do not yet do collegiate level work reach that threshold and progress. There are any number of individuals who come to community colleges who do not have a high school diploma or a secondary credential. College enrollment in adult basic education is currently at 18%. There is a growing number of individuals who need this service, who need literacy skills, be they English as a second language or being able to read a bus map. With in-migration, Oregon does appear to be attracting many individuals with post-secondary education, but we're also attracting many who don't have a high school diploma. These programs are critical to bridging that gap. Moving on to business and industry connections. I've already talked a bit about this with the professional technical programs, but there is more to it than that. Much of the work done by a community college ultimately connects the student to the community and to the workplace. Community colleges and their workforce partners work with their community to be responsive to the changing economic needs. For dislocated workers, the federally funded program, we had nearly 18,000 people laid off in Oregon last year who accessed these services. They came from 279 different companies across the state. I'm sorry, that was not last year. That was for 2003 and 2004. They're provided services so they can get back on their feet and get back to work. There are also many employers who want to provide skills to their workers, and we do that through customized training. For 2002-2003, there were 1,800 trainings conducted across the state with 500 different employers that affected 24,000 employees, providing skill training that they need to stay on the job. And it also must be mentioned that many community colleges also provide small business development center services. There is an annual report by the small business development centers, and they continue to add value to Oregon's economy through the services that they provide. It's estimated that nearly 6,000 clients receive one-on-one services, and that over 7,800 of those clients were served in 2004 alone. Coming to the end of the policy and technical assistance piece is the system alignment. This is where the all-important connection between community colleges and the bridge to both high schools and the university system. There is in our budget, which we will be talking about in phase two, an integrated data system. That system has been, the concept is to assure that success for students is achieved and that the system is accountable for that achievement. So we are aligning both policy and implementation action to support that K-16 data system. There is a pilot underway that will provide the first step of the integrated data system to ensure that students have one learning record that travels with them as they progress in their education. Curriculum alignment is another area that that we pay particular attention to. We've just been talking about some of that alignment with the transfer module, the Associate of Arts transfer degree. Just recently, in the last year or so, the Oregon Community Colleges and the four-year universities adopted an Associate of Science transfer degree in business to help another group of students make successful transfer. And I'd like to use healthcare as an example of a lot of work that has gone on across the state. I think it began in 2001 legislative session and certainly continued in 2003, a highlight across the state that our healthcare workforce was in a dramatic shortage, and we needed to marshal all of our resources, both dollars and our brain capital, to close the gap in the healthcare workforce. What I have listed in slide 28 are the technical are six key elements that we have worked to provide to bring the number of healthcare workers and both allied in all allied healthcare professions, not just nursing, to a critical point where individuals across the state are collaborating to increase. And it shows you there that we have created a statewide network of simulation centers, and that those simulation centers include the industry, the university system, and community colleges and other healthcare partners. We're making sure that the telecommunications capacity is accessible. An awful lot of hospitals have telecommunication opportunities and access, and we're working at connecting that with the education institutions so that we can leverage that equipment. We need to increase the number of healthcare faculty. We need to encourage flexibility and regulation. We have a number of innovations that have happened and have been funded both with workforce dollars and community college dollars. I have a whole list here. I think I'll save those for another day. But we have, as I said, okay, I'll use one. Distributed learning. Blue Mountain Community College has developed a partnership with Benton Franklin Community Health Alliance in Kennewick, Washington, and they're providing distributed learning modalities or using different modalities in the delivery of nursing content. An entire additional nursing cohort is funded through this partnership, so they were able to nearly double the number of students through this distributed learning or distance learning component.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And just to follow up on that, basically, in the last session, that came out of a bill, Senate Bill 800, I think was the name, where they set out the policy for nursing. We didn't have any funds, of course, to fund it. But, I mean, it helped Oregon Health Science University. I think they actually doubled their nursing program, and it helped Blue Mountain Community College because they worked out this agreement going over to the state of Washington, the Cadillac Hospital, I think, in Tri-Cities. And so, I mean, we've got a lot of the procedures in place, and we're really just down to a question of funding now.
Senator Nelson is a little bit modest. It was, I believe he was either, I can't remember if it was a sponsored bill, but you were either the chief sponsor or you were the principal proponent, or both.
Well, the fact is, Mr. Chair, my wife did most of the work. But she's a registered nurse. She understands this thing.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Another example that I will share is around recruitment and retention. One of the issues that was discovered in the research around the shortage of nursing is that many nurses are certified but leave the field. Clackamas Community College received a grant from the Northwest Health Foundation to recertify and retrain foreign-born nurses so that they could practice in Oregon. So last but certainly not least are the resources that are dedicated to these efforts. We tried to bring you a high-level picture of the federal and state resources that pass through the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and you will see the current biennium. We have projected here the number of individuals who will be served with and the actual dollar resources. Tomorrow we will spend a good deal, perhaps most of our time, on program results. The slide on page 30 gives you a sneak peek at some of the results from community colleges. This is a slide that does talk about both full-time equivalent students and headcount enrollment. So that's all the students that came to community college, and that's the 330-plus number that I gave you. I want to remind you that at our peak in 2001-02, we were serving 400,000 students. The decline since then is 19% to reach the 330 amount. Not only has the decline in service occurred, but resources to community colleges peaked in 2001-03 at $433 million, and the governor's projected budget is at $388.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. I'm looking at the decline in enrollment, and having listened to your mission and goals of community colleges, and being somewhat aware that we have gone through a stage of economic recession and high unemployment in the state of Oregon, I am curious at why the decline in enrollment in a period in time when common sense would tell me that people would be looking for new skills. And the community college would be, as you have presented it to us, the place to look for those new skills.
Yes. Senator Devlin, Representative Jensen, your point is very well taken. We believe that enrollment has been reduced because there simply isn't the resource to have additional access for those people who are looking for upgrading their skills. The budget for community colleges from the state level has been reduced in the last 3.5 years by $50 million. Some of that has been made up in tuition that colleges have increased in the last several years as well, but not nearly enough. We have information tomorrow that will talk about the decrease in course sections across the state. I will have the exact number tomorrow, but what comes to mind is that 12,000 course sections have been cut since 2001-02. It means that those classes that are there are larger, have more students enrolled in them, but if a student is late or they can't afford to take more than 3 or 6 credit hours, then they're shut out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. If I can follow with some editorial or other comments on this. One of the things I think that bothers me, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that we're not in the process in the state of Oregon of pricing our students out of the community colleges. And I understand what you've done in terms of tuition. I understand the reasons that you've had to go to the tuition increases. But the more we add to the tuition, the less it becomes, in my opinion, members, a community college, and the more it becomes an elitist school. And that is not the community college that I am familiar with, that I grew up with in this state. And I don't know what our answer or solution to this is this session, Mr. Chair, but I think it is something that we need to be aware of and look very carefully at. Thank you for indulging me.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett, then Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, and when we review your performance measures tomorrow, will you talk about the percentages of degrees versus the number of students and your outcomes? Is that part of your performance measurements?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, yes, but I'll make sure it's very clear.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first, I would like to be identified with the remarks made by the good representative, Jensen, also. You speak the truth of about where we are. I think it would be most helpful to the committee's understanding, but also to the public's understanding, as you talk about in the days ahead, the decline, that at the same time we talk about what the need actually is, so that we're not just talking about the decline, but we're presenting a complete picture, because there's pressure out there. I mean, there are people ready to break the doors down to get in and take the classes. I know that's true everywhere. So let's paint a very clear picture for the committee and our other colleagues and for the public of what that demand looks like, which also helps us make the case for why we need to have a greater investment in community colleges.
I'd comment that I've talked to some of parties in community colleges about what I refer to as the golden age in terms of a recent age of community college funding. It lasted from about July 2001 till probably about September, when people in the tragedies of September of that year, 2001, people realized it wasn't going to last, and by the end of 2001 it was gone. In terms of I think first special session was right after that, and we had been so, well, I shouldn't say impressed, but we felt so good about finally, after a 97 and 99 session of not doing anything particularly good for community colleges. We kept them alive, basically. We didn't give them anything for enrollment growth, but we basically kept them alive, that we'd actually done something in 2001. And then it lasted all of a couple of months. And I think if you look at the declines in enrollments, you can almost see a direct correlation to the drop-off in state funding and the increases in tuition. And while I don't want to be a member of the tobacco industry and say there's no correlation between smoking and health care, I will admit that there's probably a clear correlation between the drop-off in state support, the rising of tuition, and the decline in enrollment. I don't think we're actually more than maybe a decade apart in terms of what your tuition is now versus what tuition was in higher education a decade ago. So you are actually no longer the affordable entry into a post-secondary education. You are literally getting more and more expensive. And while the governor has put forward a fairly good in one area, in terms of expanding opportunity grants, we are still going to be woefully inadequate in terms of providing assistance to students that need the assistance, even with those grants. Mm-hmm. So I think we hope we can do something better for you this session, and we will try our best. So please proceed.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
Just one quick thing that's not talked about. I don't know if this body can do anything about it. And any student would be able to talk to this is the cost of textbooks. So now, if you're a community college student full-time, the cost of your textbooks probably equal the cost of your tuition. And now, and I'm not saying that we can do something about it, but it's also a significant driver. But if I could ask one question.
Yes.
Just big picture, isn't it accurate to say that at the very time when the economy is, let's say, in recession or having problems, unemployment is going up, revenue coming in to the state is dropping. That's the very time when demand for community college classes for retraining increases significantly. And that's when so tuition's raising, there's a greater demand, but the funding is less. So it's kind of this inverse sort of curve that is problematic. Isn't that accurate?
Chair Devlin, Representative, you all have provided an excellent segue for there will be a press conference at about 10:45 this morning. A study has been completed that looks at what could have, what might have happened had appropriation for community colleges not been drastically reduced and tuition not been increased. And I don't want to steal the thunder of the community college presidents who asked for that work to be done, but you are certainly making the case.
Yes. Commissioner, probably more of a comment than a question, but it strikes me that we have a room full here of the real entrepreneurs in higher education in Oregon. I think your practice should be used as a template for secondary and post-secondary education in Oregon. And you go out to the community, you find out what is needed, you tailor your product for that use, you actually know what your inputs and outputs are, you know your unit cost of education. I think in the performance module that we had put before us here about the first day, the little white deal. If you look back through that, you'll find that the community colleges had thoughtful answers to almost every one of those questions. I didn't see not applicable once. they actually know the answers to the questions, and they were willing to answer and give it to us, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm intrigued by what was just said about the press conference that's coming up at 10:45 and the release of information that has a bearing on what we're discussing here today, and most certainly in the few days ahead. I don't know what's appropriate, Mr. Chair, in terms of getting a preview of what is going to be said at the press conference. How many are all the community college presidents here in the room with us who will be participating?
Yes, please.
Most of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. It just seems a little... strange to me that we would have something so important mm-hmm. happening in about 45 minutes that affects what we're discussing here, that will be happening out of context from the discussion that's taking place here.
We could have that discussion with our co-chairs, but in reality, I think one of the things I failed to do at the beginning of this, and I should have done, actually, is explain the process that we are going through, and that is we are going through this in three phases. This is the first phase, which the co-chairs originally were going to give us 10 weeks to do, and now are giving us 6 weeks to do, which is basically to have sort of high overviews of each of the areas in the budget, look at performance measures, look at outcomes, get the committee fairly comfortable with the issues before them, then go into phase two, which is when we're going to open it up for hopefully a lot more public testimony, and I think both Senator Gordley and I will insist on that as subcommittee chairs of our respective committees. But we are in such a tight time frame now that we are in these little 3-day and 2-day increments for things that I think one of the things that we've done, like tomorrow we will have the president of Chemeketa Community College here to speak, and I think that she will be very beneficial in a sense because she can tie all this together, having been very well thought of and also now a member of the Board of Higher Education. So, but this presentation, I'm almost assured, I don't even have to be, that we will get it soon. We may even get part of it tomorrow, at least some indication of it, and I'm sure we will all get a copy of the study as soon as it can be made available to us.
Yes. Mr. Chair, indeed. Your wish is our command. We will.
So, please proceed.
So we were looking at the results map for community colleges. We'd like to turn now to the results map for the workforce development system. This is particular to much of the information that is contained in the annual report that I referenced earlier, the Stronger Together. What we try to do is pull out each region of the state. The workforce development regions are approved by the governor and organized around local labor markets. There were over 20,000 adults, dislocated worker, and youth that were served by the Title I-B, as it is referred to, the federal program. In addition, we had more than 2,000 individuals who were laid off and received assistance through a national emergency grant. The legislature has given the department a non-limited fund where we can seek from the Department of Labor emergency grants to serve dislocated workers as it happens and report to you during the legislative session instead of making a request to the emergency board, which has had in the past slowed down our ability to seek those grants, and therefore the resources didn't flow as quickly back to the state to serve workers who were impacted by closures and layoffs. Just some highlights here. 80% of the participants and 75% of the employers who accessed the workforce system, that WorkSource Oregon system, are very satisfied with their participation. 86% of adults who accessed the service found employment, which was nearly 10% more than we had anticipated. 87% of workers who were dislocated from a previous employer have found employment. Wages, although they started a little lower at the beginning of this year, have begun to rise, an average of 82 cents an hour. That's from the time an individual is placed in a job, and we track their a retention in that job over 8 quarters. And after 2 quarters, their wages had increased 82 cents. The next map is results from the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Tomorrow we'll talk more specifically about performance from the Conservation Corps. I wanted to read you a quote from a youth who was served recently. "I wanted to hate being a Community Stewardship Corps member, but I found that the program has made me a better person and a better worker. I thought I was a follower, but I found out I'm a leader," said by someone who was under 21, who had participated in an OYCC program.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Ms. Price-Ball. I serve on the advisory committee for that organization, and so I'm going to have a lot of great things to talk about it tomorrow. It does. I mean, your letter you just read, your comment, says it all about that organization.
Thank you. I'd like to spend some minutes now talking about budget notes that were in the Community College and Workforce Development budget for 2003-05. We have noted here the budget note as it appeared, and the action that was taken by the department. You will see the first budget note was the special purpose appropriation of $10.7 million in general fund. That was set aside for the Community College Support Fund when the department came to resolution on a funding formula. That was accomplished in January of 2004, and the $10.7 million was approved for dispersal.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, that's not exactly true, is it? I mean, that was a distribution formula for that 1 year only. That's not a permanent. Do you need a qualifier or adjective about that distribution formula?
Senator Devlin, Representative Wisnett, that is true, the formula was a one-year formula. Yes, and we are in conversation about what it will be into the future.
Yes. Hope the committee will please note that, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Please proceed.
The second budget note pertained to self-improvement classes. The budget, the Ways and Means Committee made a policy statement that those self-improvement classes that were not health, safety, or workforce related in content would no longer be reimbursed. We have accomplished that legislative intent. They are no longer reimbursed. The department did develop and the State Board of Education approved new guidelines for self-improvement courses, and training has been conducted with all the colleges, and the change was effective in July of 2003. Adult continuing education courses have declined across the state from approximately 10% to 4% in this last year.
Is that directly reflective of having to charge the full cost of those courses to participants?
Mr. Chair, yes, I would assume that the number of non-reimbursed self-improvement courses has taken the place of those who are reimbursed.
Yes. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I probably can get a pretty quick handle on health and perhaps on safety. But when we use the term workforce related, do you have are there some specific definitions that go with that? And if so, would they be at some time, not necessarily now, Mr. Chair, but shared with the committee?
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, yes, we certainly can. There is a structured definition of what is workforce related, and I'd be happy to bring back some examples of what that means.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, Mr. Commissioner, can you give me just a few examples of self-improvement classes that were targeted here?
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, would that be targeted to not be reimbursed or
yes.
to be reimbursed?
To not be reimbursed.
There were classes that the community college built that was responsive to a community request. And I'm drawing a complete and utter blank to give you an example. Art in a senior center could have easily been a hands-on art participation class for seniors that would have been reimbursed previously. Now it would not.
So more of the social type of classes as opposed to the workforce-related classes.
Chair Devlin, yeah. Senator Whitsitt, the answer is yes, but I want to make sure that the committee understands that hobby and recreation courses have never been reimbursable. So the underwater basket weaving that we always heard was never a reimbursable class if it ever occurred. But this would be art appreciation, not art, you know, therapy, yeah, something like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gorley.
The budget note was driven by the values of the people who wanted to make that decision at that particular point in time. But the information that you've provided to us doesn't tell us anything about what has been the impact of doing away with those those courses. I mean, there was a community of people out there, a constituency, if you will, who look to community colleges to provide these things. So what has been the impact?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, if I might bring back a complete answer to your question, I could give you an approximation, but I'd rather not do that today.
Thank you.
That
would be fine.
The last budget note dealt with legislative intent to not support increases in salary, wages, or benefits for community college employees during the biennium. And the subcommittee indicated they expected no such increases to be awarded. At the time that budget note was added to the budget, I did bring to the community or to the panel that I, as Commissioner of Community Colleges, did not have direct line authority to make such a legislative intent come true. I have, however, made sure that each community college understood the legislative intent and provided them a copy of the budget note. And to their credit, each of them worked hard with their boards and their representatives from their labor organizations to ensure that the legislative intent was carried out. You would recognize that some of them had open contracts. Some of them had already closed their bargaining contract. So it was
no
difficult. It was difficult to say hold the line on in some certain circumstances.
Mr.
to finish up today, I just wanted to bring you back to providing value to Oregonians. That's what community colleges do. Community colleges have been again rated, and we believe are a highly prized public service for Oregonians, securing the second highest overall rating from the population survey that was just completed earlier this year. Oregonians rely on community colleges to provide access to post-secondary education. And tomorrow we'll talk about the success that we have had in meeting both those performance measures and that access that people expect of us. We will also discuss current funding constraints and how that puts both our policy and our performance at risk, as it limits community colleges and the access they are able to provide and the decreasing affordability for students.
Representative Jensen.
I see in your slide you're listing the Carl Perkins funds. Did I see, read, or something that's been seriously cut? These are federal dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, you could call it severely. It's zeroed out in the 06 budget. Yes, it would be, I believe the language in the administration's proposal would be to move it to high school reform efforts, similar to No Child Left Behind. And there would no longer be career and professional technical education that was funded at the federal level.
Can I clarify on that? And that's in terms of the president's proposed budget. Obviously, there will be people arguing from both sides of the aisle in Congress that that may not be the wisest move.
Thank you. I did want to come back to the point that there is going to be the report that is released later today. It does indicate that our ability, the community college's ability to provide accessible and affordable services to Oregonians is in jeopardy. The study was prepared for the community college presidents, and it explores the relationship between various factors, including state funding and their effect on enrollment in Oregon. Tomorrow we will show you the trends we are seeing from decreased state funding, higher tuition, and decreased enrollment. Each of these trends affects how community colleges are able to provide education and training services for Oregonians. So the success that you see in the slide listed here are in jeopardy, that 86% of adults served entered employment, that 16,000 students transfer from a community college to the university. Access is at risk in Oregon, and I want to thank you very much for your time and your comments today, and look forward to sharing with you those results tomorrow.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. And I don't know whether this will come in discussion tomorrow or not, but I would be interested. I'm familiar a little bit with my local community college on this, not familiar around the state, but I would be interested in the what's happening in terms of other funding, like endowments or efforts that the community colleges are making to do some of this. I know that we have at Blue Mountain been fortunate and had a few gifts over the years, some of which are, you know, kind of ongoing and will and you know, it does strike me that perhaps we shouldn't be in competition with other education, but we are. I mean, because there are dollars involved, and this strikes me as an area where if I may include, you know, us as community colleges, if I may use the word us, that we have a real responsibility to our students and to our future students to look to the same sort of thing that perhaps the university systems have been able to use effectively in the past and probably still will. So I don't know whether that's appropriate or whether you're going to talk about that at all, but it's certainly something I would be interested in. And if you're not doing it now, I'm wondering if a concerted effort by the OCCA, as you know, might not be something that could be undertaken. And I apologize if my comments are totally unimportant and you already get this under control.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, they're not at all inappropriate or inappropriate. I cannot answer your question at this moment. I will endeavor to gather the information. I would certainly be able to bring you at least a portion of the colleges and their efforts around other resource leveraging and endowments and gifts. And I'm not sure I can bring all 17 back by tomorrow, but I will certainly, it will be added to our list of information that we need to return to the community with, to the committee with. I think it is terribly important information.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Cam, for putting this all together and giving us a nice overview of where we're at. I think you can tell probably that this committee and for the audience, this committee is probably is very supportive of community colleges. We're there on the same page with you folks. We're in a situation, though, where I mean the taxpayer through Measure 28 and Measure 30 has said, you know, we're not going to send you guys any more tax money. Yesterday we had K through 12, they want $300 million. We have the governor's office who basically said he made a mistake with the community college budget, so there's, you know, $22 million or whatever the figure is that's involved with that and potentially more for some of your programs. We know Oregon Health Science University is going to come in and want $36 million. So we're really struggling with this is, you know, we're going to do this. And so I guess as I have the audience here, I always like to plant some ideas and some seeds, and also for my good senator, that we always talk about this, but there's a huge demand for more money in the system, regardless of whether you're talking about education or health care or safety. And so what I do is I look around at the other states that we have involved, and who is doing well and who isn't doing well and why. And I think that's what we need to look at this whole thing. Oregon, as Representative Jensen tells me many times, is we're one of the 38 states that is struggling. There are 12 states in the United States that actually have surpluses in this next go-around. Well, that would be a great position to be in. Eight of those states are west of the Mississippi River. You have Hawaii that has a tourist niche. You have Nevada that has a gambling niche. I'm on my soapbox here. And, you know, if we're looking for a utopia to help a taxpayer, the taxpayer says, lower my taxes and fund all these services, all I have to do is look to Alaska. They have a $600 million surplus this year. They have no income tax, they have no sales tax, but they're selling oil at $40 a barrel. Montana has an income tax, but no sales tax. So my analysis of the whole thing is really doesn't make any difference where our taxing system is. It's how we're using those things that are unique to us, you know. I mean, probably not going to go to gambling. We don't have the tourism that Hawaii has. We have some. But we need to focus upon those things that we do really well and in such magnitude that we can fund $1 billion more for public services, which is probably what we need. And you have to go either to the timber industry or you have to go to the use of water out of the Columbia River. And that just drives people nuts. Some people in our society think that we cannot do that, should not do that because of the quality of life. But the fact is we are destroying our quality of life by not educating our people. So that's the idea. When you folks are out there talking to your communities, talk about how we're going to solve this. And it's, I don't think it's a taxing system, tax reform. I think It's going back to your natural resource base. Those things that, you know, think in terms of a public trust. That's what Alaska does. They sell that oil. They donate a lot of that money to a public trust for the benefit of their state, for their citizens, for education. So go out and spread that word, would you, and help us out up here so we don't have to have all these discussions. We know you need more money. We just want to figure out a way to get to it.
Can I get on my soapbox, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Everybody wants to.
I have a soapbox as well, and I... You know, I agree with what my good friend and the senator from Pendleton has just said. I would just add to it that I believe, as do many Oregonians, that we do have a broken revenue gathering system that is desperately in need of reform, that our revenue system as we know it does not capture sufficient revenues to pay for the services that now exist and the services and the need that is growing in our state. And that's a reality that we're going to have to find our way to collectively accept. I appreciate so much that Senator Nelson continues to stand on the soapbox and to plant those seeds. And again, I just want to say that I don't see it as and or. I see it as we need to do all of those things in order to bring Oregon's system of financing public services into the 21st century. That's our challenge. And that's our struggle around getting to some consensus that will allow us to serve the greater good.
I have had a request from the committee that actually those community college presidents that are in the audience, and I'm going to do this very carefully, or my analyst to my left and my committee assistant are going to be upset, is that I can't actually open public testimony in the sense that that they testify to some matter unless they came to the microphone, and that would probably take the next 45 minutes. But if those that are community college presidents could please stand and identify themselves, and also board members from community colleges, and if they could... And if you'd just like to start here and identify yourself, and this is not part of the official record, I've just asked people to stand in the audience and say where they're from.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gretchen Schutte, President of Temecula Community College.
John Turner, President of Blue Mountain Community College.
Jim Middleton, President of Central Oregon Community College.
Connie Lee, Chair, Central Oregon Community College.
Norma
Angevin,
Board Member, Portland Community
okay.
College.
Aaron
Stilby, President of
the
Blaine Community College.
Alex Gatewood, President of Cascade Campus, Portland Community College.
Lane Nissen, President of the Blaine College.
Pat O'Connor, President of Oregon Coast Community College.
Fred Smith, President of Plymouth Community College.
Pete Nevin, Chair of Plymouth Community College.
Peter Hainstead, President of Rural Community College.
Ralph Orr, President of Sullivan Bay Community College.
Frank Foda, President of Columbia Gorge Community College.
Bob Silverman, President of Mount Hood Community College.
Chuck Fleming, Board Member of Clackamas Community College and President of OCCA.
Duke Shepard, Board Member of Mount Hood Community College.
Dan Austin, Board Member of Chemeketa Community College.
Marilyn Crowther, Board Member of Chemeketa Community College.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming, and the others in the audience also, particularly the students and other faculty members from community colleges and other interested members of the public. And with that, we will be adjourned until tomorrow morning at 8:30.